appearance of his face changed, and his clothes became dazzlingly white. The story of the transfiguration of Jesus held a particular fascination for Bill Crockett. In his home study, amidst many books, there was an icon of this moment in the New Testament where the disciples witness the amazing change in Jesus' physical appearance. Actually, the icon's right here. Come take a look at it. Luke's Gospel reports that Jesus' face changes. Doesn't say exactly how, and his clothes became dazzling white. Not only that, Peter, James, and John see two of the ancient prophets, Moses and Elijah, standing right beside Jesus, talking to him. "Whoa," says Peter. Well, that's the Greek, actually. Maybe not whoa, but probably something like that. Maybe he said, "This is so cool," like the kids say today. And he goes on to propose building a museum, a monument of some kind, statue, something, to freeze the moment in time, because it was literally awesome. And then, if that all works Steven Spielberg enough, there's a voice from heaven that everybody can hear saying exactly the same thing that it said at Jesus' baptism. "This is my son. This is the beloved, the chosen. Listen to him." And then it all ended. The light, the ancient prophets disappear. The voice, the change in Jesus' face, and they go down the mountain. And they never speak of it again until after the resurrection. Now you have to wonder why Bill, whose capacity for rational thought, with his capacity to express complex philosophical and theological concepts succinctly and eloquently, why this particular story would have so captured his imagination. This story, all stories. After all, in Bill, we had the privilege of knowing someone who could summarize centuries of Christian thought in a 3-page document. Someone who could converse easily on matters of medieval scholarship. Someone who could make canon connections between something he saw at a movie or in a theater one night and the news of the current day, and the thought of St. Anselm, and the thought of Bonaventure, and just kind of blow you away with his intellect. Bill was gifted with a mind that could comprehend complexity. And what I loved about Bill was how he could make that accessible to the rest of us, more feeble-minded folks. So what do you think it was in this weird and wonderful story of the transfiguration of Jesus that drew Bill in? Well, maybe it was the sheer absurdity of it all, because after all, we know Bill loved to laugh. Amongst the many things I'm going to miss about his presence is watching how his face would be, let's say, transfigured from absolute seriousness to joy in just a nanosecond. How many times have I seen him express a theological point with great seriousness and then watch his face transform as something struck him as funny, and then laugh with joy? Bill had a childlike sense of wonder mixed with professorial intelligence. It seemed to make it easy for him to relate to his children, his grandchildren, and able to have a really serious conversation one moment and be dissolved in great laughter the next. So maybe that's it. Maybe he was drawn to the story of transfiguration because it kind of says how you can be serious one moment and then transformed into laughter the next. But of course, there's something deeper going on here. Something that bears not only on his scholarship, but also on his experience of life. And it's something that can give us great hope as we offer a requiem for him today, now that he has left this earthly life and is in the realm of God's greater eternal glory. I think what's more here is about the Eucharist. After all, his great book is titled Eucharist, Symbol of Transformation. And as we all know, transformation is a synonym for transfiguration. It means the same thing. Bill's spirituality was centered on the Eucharist, this gathering of the Christian community around bread and wine. From growing up in the Anglo-Catholic parish of St. Thomas on Huron Street, Toronto, to his deep association with this cathedral church and with St. James, the celebration of the Eucharist, particularly on Sunday, was where Bill felt most at home. With Jean by his side, and often with his daughters and their families, it was rare that Bill would miss a Sunday here. He was so faithful that if he had to miss a Sunday because he had a cold or something, he would call in the office to let us know that he wouldn't be here. When we were restoring this space, not only did he provide invaluable work to articulate liturgical principles, which the architecture now expresses, principles, by the way, that have been shared across the Anglican Communion, not only did he do that, but he and Jane graciously and generously gave the altar that's in our midst today, and both of them were involved in its design. The Eucharist, as a symbol of transformation, was at the heart of his scholarship and of his spirituality. So the question is, how does the Eucharist transform us? Well, does it in all sorts of ways, all at the same time. It transforms our perceptions of each other. When we gather around the bread and wine, we remember that we are deeply related to each other. We are connected to each other not by bloodlines, but by the virtue of a shared humanity redeemed in Jesus Christ. As you enter more deeply into Eucharistic theology, you realize that each one of us, made in the image of God, are the beloved of God. Just as the voice from the cloud described Jesus on the Mount of Transfiguration and the Jordan River. Each human being is beloved of God and is invited into the holy work of the transformation of the world. That transformation is to change the world to be a place of peace and justice rather than a place of war and discrimination. It's to transform the world into being a place where all have food and shelter and the dignity that is afforded to God's beloved ones. In this way, justice seeking and spirituality are not separate, they are fused, just like the human family and the earth is one. So is the pursuit of justice fused with spirituality in Eucharistic theology. They are inseparable. The light of God shines through the transfiguration of Jesus is a light that penetrates even the darkness of our hearts, inviting us to remember and to know ourselves as God's beloved ones, and to alter our perception of others, to see in them the light of God as well. Bill concludes his book with a quote from the Catholic theologian Raimundo Panikkar, who wrote these words, and they're the last words of Bill's book. The great challenge today is to convert the sacred bread into real bread, the liturgical peace into political peace, the worship of the Creator into reverence for the creation, the Christian praying community into an authentic human fellowship. He goes on, it is risky to celebrate the Eucharist. We may have to leave it unfinished, having gone back first to give the poor what belongs to them. Amen is right. Such radical thoughts were never far from Bill's mind. As he and Jean grew older, they made wise choices for themselves, moving out of their family home in Dunbar, first into a condo, and then to the terraces, where they found and built community. Bill kept working as a scholar, continuing to be of service to the diocese and to his parish as a wise theological advisor. In the last conversation he and I had just a few weeks before his death, I asked if he would co-lead a course on the creeds here at the cathedral, and he readily agreed. How we'll miss hearing his voice. When the cathedral's bell spire was complete, it was Bill we went to figure out how to ring the bells at the Eucharist. I mean, Christ Church was founded as a low church. And bells can still get a bit of a reaction. So, theologically, so Bill went off and wrote a paper, 3 pages. He researched ancient Syrian rites and the Russian Orthodox, and oh my gosh, it was extraordinary. In himself, he was theologically wary of a moment of consecration, when the priest said certain words. So, after his 2.5 pages, his advice was for us to ring the bells at the conclusion of the Great Thanksgiving, after the congregation offers its amen, because with the congregation's amen, Christ's transforming presence in the Eucharist is complete, not through the words of the priests alone, but through the whole community's affirmation. We took his advice, we've been doing it, no one has raised. While his scholarship has been a great gift to the church here, across the country, and indeed around the world, his tender love toward his family is what marks him most as a gentle disciple of Jesus Christ. His marriage to Jean, whose birthday was yesterday. So good that your family is with you. His marriage to Jean for 58 years saw them navigate through many seasons of life as parents and professionals, as traveling companions on over 40 cruises, imagine that, and in the last 2 years as partners in care, as they each faced health challenges and supported each other so beautifully. Bill's care of you, particularly, warms our hearts. You will miss him, and we miss him. I've always thought that Bill's progressive views on gender were deeply influenced by living in a household with his intelligent wife and 3 wonderfully smart daughters. No wonder he championed the ordination of women. As a grandfather, his sense of playfulness and joy brought nothing but affection to him from his grandchildren and them to him. And now as we give thanks to God for his life so well lived, we know that Bill has undergone another transfiguration. Just a few days before Bill died, the great Trappist monk and contemplative Thomas Keating died. About death and dying, Keating wrote these words. The dying process is the culmination or the peak of the whole development of the spiritual journey in which total surrender to God involves the gift of life itself. Give our life to God. It's not really death, Keating goes on, but life reaching out to a fullness that we can't imagine from this side of the dying process. Life reaching out to a fullness, a transfiguration of all that is into the mystery of God. At the funeral of Dr. Christopher Lind, my brother-in-law, a few years ago, Bill was our family's unanimous choice to be the preacher, and his homily included these words, which I have adapted ever so slightly for today. The heart of the universe, Bill said, is a love and energy that is stronger than death. This love and this energy is what Christians call God. This love and this energy is what Christians call God. God is the power of love and energy at the heart of the universe, and it is into the arms of this love and this energy that both Bill and his family are now enfolded. Thanks be to God for the gift of our friend and brother, Bill Carter.